Ryan Eric King's prodigal son might actually be for real. This is now a problem. Welcome back to Motorsport 101. You can't see it on our normal way of streaming Motorsport 101, but as soon as I said that, Ryan King took a big swig of his apple juice and grinned profusely. That is a man who knows. Welcome to episode 593 of Motorsport 101. I'm your friendly neighborhood host, Trey Harrison. Glad you could join us again as we wrap up and put a neat little bow on this incredible weekend of racing that we had. We had Formula One in Canada, where McLaren's collided and a T-poser won. We had a young teenager on the podium. That was fun. We all liked that. That was adorable. We had a crazy Le Mans 24 hours, even if it was remarkably tame by Le Mans standards, and Ferrari picks up a historic hat-trick with a much-beloved winner. And now we have IndyCar at Gateway, which was here too. It was proudly in attendance. I love that our Discord server was like, there's no way we're going to watch this race, given it's 1:30 a.m. in the UK on a Monday morning. And yet we roll out in force anyway, because that's what we do here. We are absolutely sickos, but we did it anyway. Who do you mean? You were preoccupied.
I was preoccupied with trying to sleep as much as I could before I had to get on a train to catch another train to go to the airport to take a plane all the way across the Atlantic to then take another plane back home.
Yeah, yeah. Like, to be fair, you had a good reason. You were busy and preoccupied. King was on streaming duty, and he took one for the team on this occasion. My man was tired as shit, and we watched it via totally legal means, and King flied the flag for us. Me, I was out.
I was fired anyway, Harrison. Fuck it.
I was out. I was like, nope, I've had 3 hours of sleep. I'm like, this can wait till Monday morning. Actual Monday morning, not just past midnight Monday morning. But in IndyCar's defense, genuinely great race. We've got to give him that. It's almost like people have been asking for more IndyCar oval races. It's amazing how these things turn out. And it's surprising news. We had another really, really great IndyCar race. In fact, it was so great. Our Discord server is apparently watching it for the third time now. That's how good it apparently was.
Absolutely. Holy shit.
Yeah, that's a thing. Yeah,
they're just sickos. Absolutely.
Well, I love that King literally pointed at the screen by accident. It's like, they're just sickos. And I completely agree.
This was perhaps the race of the year. We were so down about the quality of racing. We had good reason to be, but this was a damn good Bomarito Automotive Group 500 Worldwide Technology Raceway, formerly known as Gateway Motorsports Park.
Just run them on ovals.
You don't want to just run them on oval because we tried this before and it wasn't good.
Okay, I admit it had its fair share of problems, but we're down 2 ovals compared to last year. Let's not forget that. Like, the science was solid on this, okay? We've gone backwards. Joining me on the show, as you've probably guessed by now, to discuss all things Gateway. Now he's back in the United States, and he's broken out the Hawaiian shirt for the occasion as well. It's RJ O'Connell. How's it going, buddy?
Oh, man. Great to be back. If you're listening to this, I'm probably at Watkins Glen right now, enjoying the 6 hours.
More endurance racing. More.
More and more. See, There are sickos out there that are going to pull off all 3 legs of June Mageddon, which, of course, is Le Mans, the Nürburgring this week, and Spa the week after. 3 24-hour races back-to-back-to-back.
Oh, fuck yeah.
Oh, yeah. It's nobody likes you. If you are simply an endurance racing fan with no participation stakes, you love it. If you have any stake in the game, or if you're a mediator just tired and need a rest, you can't stand June Mageddon.
So that's what we're calling it now, June Mageddon. That tracks. That makes perfect sense, actually. God damn. Oh, that is I forgot that was a thing that they were.
We can do that later.
Yeah,
they're calling it, not me.
Yeah, we'll figure out the rest later. In the meantime, we'll reintroduce you to the man who's escaped many a meeting to stick around with us for two whole episodes. It's Ryan Eric King. Hello, sir.
It is a quarter after six. If you're in a work meeting now, I feel sad for you.
You don't know how my J job runs sometimes. Trust me.
I've heard.
Oh, yeah. They are probably accurate.
Also, things. Not as many crazy things as what happens when every pizza place in Washington, D.C. is suddenly a lot more busy at night than usual. Seriously, we don't need any more new wars.
No, we do not. Absolutely not. Let's talk about IndyCar and Gateway coming up. We've got Kyle Kirkwood. I mean, it would be really nice if somebody else in IndyCar won besides Kyle.
It's just this duopoly.
Like, I love that IndyCar and Fox News on Instagram, they put the graphic up of every race winner as they run through the calendar, and it's like, Kirkwood times three, Polo times five. That's it.
You know what this Kyle Kirkwood means in retrospect? Another success for the conglomerate that now owns your beloved Los Angeles Lakers. Because this broke during the last episode that Jeannie Buss has sold a majority stake to TWG, the group that also owns entities like Chelsea, the Dodgers, the LA Sparks, RC Strasburg, Andretti Global, Cadillac F1, Spire Motorsports. They've been in the news lately. Don't ask why.
Not great. Let's just say, as a wide-ranging and esteemed sports fan, I am deeply conflicted at this news. Deeply conflicted. On the one hand, Kelsey Plum. On the other hand, Chelsea Football Club.
And on the other hand, Kyle Kirkwood.
Yay! We like Kyle Kirkwood. He's just a nice, polite fisherman. We like that. So we were talking about him. Team Penske, and how this was meant to be their hunting ground, and they left with literally the complete opposite to that. One of the worst Penske weekends you could possibly imagine. Yes, there's been worse ones than this, but this one's up there. Oh, we'll get into that. Alex Palou and where he shakes in the title fight situation. The fact this race was a real sort of day of the underdog, really, with Christian Rasmussen on the podium for Ed Carpenter Racing. Who would have had that with the bookies going into this one? Connor Daly mingling with the win. David Malukas in the mix until he suddenly wasn't. Oh, boy. All of that and much more to come as well, because we also had a certain leak of some certain team drivers' radio on social media today.
It's not a leak.
Okay.
It's accessible via the IndyCar app, but like, who's pulling a driver that's...
A publishing.
Great. Just tell the good people where they can find this, because I need a stiffer drink.
A stiff one. While RJ pours the 3 ounces of bourbon required to get through this podcast, I'll tell you where you can find us in the meantime. We're on youtube.com/motorsport101. We're on Twitter at motorsport_101. As RJ's actually tried to finish pouring out a beer. Poor guy is going
through it. It's sparkling water, goddammit.
I don't recognize American brands. Leave me alone. We're on Instagram.com on Motorsport101Pod. King's wondering, what did I sign up for? I'd rather be in that meeting. We're on Blue Sky at Dre Harrison, RJ O'Connell and Ryan Eric King at bsky.social. You can follow us on TikTok at 101_podcast. You can follow us on there as well. And you can check out our website, motorsport101.com, and patreon.com/motorsport101. If you really want to financially back us on there, you absolute sickos. If you've been listening to this for the last 8 minutes and feel like these are guys that are worth financially backing, you're crazy. But we do appreciate your patron anyway. $5 gets you early access to all of our content. You can upgrade to the $10 tier so you can listen to these episodes live as they're being recorded, as the IndyCar sickos are doing so in the chat as we speak. Edwin, Kieran, Raptor, pleasure to have you. As always, thank you so much for your ongoing support. Much appreciated. After this, IndyCar and Gateway. Roll the music.
That's right. It's the most exciting thing to hit St. Louis as Mark McGwire was chasing Roger Maris. IndyCar's return to Gateway was a wild one. Penske locked out four of the top five spots in qualifying. Penske only has three cars. Oh, yeah. They also have that technical alliance with AJ Foyt Racing and that quasi-mentorship deal they've got with David Malukas. And Malukas got a hard start before Devlin DeFrancesco brought out an early caution. We brought in Ryan Eric Payne to talk about us. King, what is your reaction to Devlin DeFrancesco's early misfortunes?
Have happened to a nicer guy.
If you know their history in the Save the Freedom 100, you'll understand.
He took that well. He sent that through gritted teeth. Fists clenched.
Yeah, but unfortunately, Team Penske's day as a whole soon collapsed. Will Power's tire deflated, and he was out of the running. Scott McLaughlin had a technical failure. Dre's pick is already looking great. And in the second greatest commercial transition to an accident in North American motorsport history, Joseph Newgarden is leading the race when Louis Foster spun out on his own power. Joseph Newgarden has two ways to try and avoid it. He picked the wrong one. He gets collected. He flips over against the wall and skids on his lid. And we got Pat O'Ward and Connor Daly fighting for the win. But when David Malukas skimmed the wall and brought out a caution, two fuel strategies split field. Scott Dixon couldn't pull off the almighty fuel save. Maybe he's lost it. And it freed up Kyle Kirkwood to the front. And the Florida man held off Pato and a rampaging Chris Rasmussen to take his third win of the season and his first NTT IndyCar Series win on.
I love the fact as well as a bonus stat. Last time, the first eight races in an IndyCar season was won by just two people. 1980.
Oh. It's been that long.
Yeah, 45 years.
Oh, man. And I should point out, for Andretti's standpoint, last time they had a driver get three wins over the course of a season was Colton Herta back in 2021. The last time they had more than three wins in a season was all the way back in 2018 when Alexander Rossi had three wins with Andretti and Ryan Hunter-Reay had two more.
Good Lord, it's been that. It's been 7 years since they've had a three-win season.
More than three wins.
Oh, Christ.
It's been a while. If you want to know the two drivers who won all those races in 1980, Johnny Rutherford and Bobby Unser would eventually combine to win the first nine races of a 12-race CART PPG IndyCar World Series.
Not a bad pair of drivers. Safe to say.
No, not a bad pair at all. The other drivers that won races, Mario Andretti, Rick Mears, and Tom Sneva, one apiece.
Not bad. Not bad.
Not bad company. But, I mean, Dre, is he back? Is Kyle Kirkwood back in this title race? Because, okay, Alex Palou didn't have his best day. He didn't have his worst day. He was just eighth.
He was just there. And we're kind of like merging two bullet points into one here a little bit, but
the idea that eighth is just there.
Have you seen his season? Have you seen him the last two seasons? Yes, this is a bad day for Alex Palou. No, it's ridiculous as it is to say, but I mean, through no real fault of his own, Alex Palou had a 115-point gap after the Indy 500 win. It's 73 now, and that was with Kirkwood being DQ'd from that same 500. He's here. The truth is here. We did a whole special about Kyle Kirkwood a few years ago when he was about to make his IndyCar debut, because King was adamant that this man was a freak. He may have been right. So much so...
Considering that... His Andretti teammates are doing a nice hot serving of, wait, where is everybody?
Let's put it to you this way. Carl Kirkwood is third in the standings, 75 points off the top. Colton Herta is in ninth, 165 points back. And he almost certainly will not be getting his F1 super license now, barring a miracle. And Marcus Ericsson is 19th, somehow having an even worse season than he was last year, when we kind of gave him the benefit of the doubt due to luck and some decent pace on road and street courses.
For like one day, he was the runner-up in the Indianapolis 500 until he wasn't.
Ugh. Like, again, not all Marcus Ericsson's fault, but man, that man's going out sad the way he's going at Andretti at the moment, but look, there's no getting around it now. Kyle Kirkwood is just a threat everywhere. Like, last year was the only real question mark left, really, was ovals. And he had a strong 500 until he was unfortunately collected by Felix Rosenquist. And next thing you know, Snowball had a tire in her. And again at Nashville towards the end of the season, where he was strong on that oval, it was a race that was overshadowed by Colton Herta doing his best Ricardo Zonta impression to win that race. Kirkwood's not really got very many holes left in his game at this point. Like, it's not a coincidence. He's just a free-tool driver now. The oval was really the last box to check, and you could even make an argument back then. A year ago, he was getting it together oval-wise, too. This is terrifying. Like, this is, like, everything King said turned out to be true. I don't like it.
but you have to respect it. I mean, absolutely. I go back to his Indy Lights season in 2021. You know, the season where he was so good. David Malukas kept him closer than we like to give him credit for that year, and he did wind up winning both of those gateway races. Those were the only two ovals in 2021 Indy Lights, now known as Indy Nets. But you know who was second both of those? Kyle Kirkwood.
Yeah. I mean, I think it was some ludicrous record, King. Like, it was like 44 out of the 51 Road to Indy races he ever took part in, he won, or something stupid like that.
It was like his win rate was above 90%. It was absurd.
Oh, and he's also won the 12 Hours of Sebring and Petit Le Mans in his class.
Decent sports car driver as well. Would he have been at Le Mans if it wasn't for this kind of clash?
No.
No?
No, because... remember at LMGT3, it's pro-ams, and they've already got their pros locked up. And There aren't that many part-time teams that run the lessons. Actually, it's just the ASP team. But anyway, I'd love to see Kyle Kirkwood at the 24 Hours and Lots of Time if they're ever not clashing. Yeah, Kyle Kirkwood's really, really outstanding. It felt like this was coming for a while. They finally got together. In 2023, we saw a lot of peak, but not a lot of floor. Last year, we saw a whole lot of floor, not a lot of peak. And now it finally seems, after the nonsense at Indianapolis, finally start to see the complete package of what could be. He just has to keep that going. Got Road America, Mid-Ohio, Iowa doubleheader in Toronto all coming up, Laguna Seca as well. We're in that championship stretch run. You figure Kirkwood could do well to get a permanent road course win on the docket at some point.
He's got a good opportunity to. Andretti has gone well at Road America in the past. Colton Herta arguably should have won this race back-to-back a couple of years due to outside shenanigans. But I wanted to ask you, King, as a man who's followed Kirkwood's career all through the juniors up until now, what's it like actually seeing him come to fruition as he bangs on the door of becoming a genuine elite driver in IndyCar now? Because You forecast this to a degree, and it's actually happened. Did you actually believe that this was possible? Especially so soon, because you got to remember, this is only his fourth season in IndyCar?
Yeah, fourth season. How do I put this? Because, yes, it's his fourth season. You also have to remember, like, this is, like, what, Palou's sixth season? It seems like the potential has always been there. The ability has always been there. It seems like his performance on track has mainly reflected the performance or lack thereof from Andretti.
Yeah, it's always been a little bit parallel to that. Obviously, he was a little bit in Colton Herta's shadow through last year because Colton had the big upside moments in Andretti last year, was championship runner-up, had that late surge towards the end of the season. Again, Colton, you could argue, what could have been if that tire didn't come off in Milwaukee? He's right there with Pellegrini at the end of the season. Kirkwood's becoming this team's leader at a scary rate. Like, Colton has been disappointing this year, and Kirkwood's just stepped up and just started spearheading this team. They're calling him King of the Streets now because of how good he was at Long Beach. And the fact he's won two street track races this year. The road courses, it's not quite come together yet, but that's really the, like, even then, like, he's running up the score. If he takes that off, then everybody's in trouble. He's just become the complete package now. And, look, he's just not had very many bad days at all. We've had 8 races, 6 top 10s, 4 top 5s, 3 wins. He's had a pole position at Long Beach as well. If that was the peak of Kirkwood's stats, we'd call that a good year in IndyCar. We've seen people win titles on 3 wins in a season. Like, Pelot did it the first time on 3 wins. This is championship credential stuff. It's just Alex Pelot, man.
Yeah, Alex Pelot.
Let's stop scoring points.
just stop scoring.
Are you saying that, like, Alex, are you banking on Alex Pelot to stop scoring points?
No.
Good luck.
I'm illustrating the problem.
Yeah, that's the problem. You're not going to expect him to get rammed up the rear end going into the first corner and a restart every single race. That just doesn't happen. This was another weekend where just, like, other people have accidents. Alex Pelot doesn't.
Yeah, like, there is, if there ever was a visual metaphor, and we'll get to Team Penske pretty much after this, in regards to the Joseph Newgarden incident that's gone semi-viral. I mean, again, BBC had the footage on their website. The BBC doesn't cover IndyCar, but they put the crash of Newgarden on their website. Shit's wild. But there is a visual metaphor of as Foster is coming off the outside wall when he's spun out on his own power and he's lost control of his car. Newgarden and Pelot are running pretty much virtually dead level on track. Pelot goes to the right as Foster goes left, and Newgarden goes further to the left. He runs out of road, and that's what leads to that enormous smash that puts him on the barrier, upside down, and then back onto the track again, while Pelot gets away scot-free again.
I alluded to it. This is the second funniest cutaway to a big wreck that I've ever seen in North American sports broadcasting history. The first one that comes to mind is at the 2002 Daytona 500, where it's about 3/4 of the race, and they cut to a Ford commercial where Dale Jarrett, 3-time Daytona 500 winner, is, like, trying to sell people a brand new Ford Taurus, and they've got the husband and wife, they're saying they really like it, but they're not sure. And Dale suggests, well, how about a test drive? And he throws up a smile, and as soon as that happened, bam, hard cut to the big one in a turn one. It's the funniest bit of broadcast.
We're going to commercial. No, we are not. Jesus, that was an absolutely wild scene. And as someone who is a Marc Marquez fan, having seen what happened at COTA already this season in Austin, and having to see Dorna cut their own TV intro because he was scrambling down the pit lane so hard, I'm like, how do we one up this? Like, how do we one up this from April? I know, we're just going to have an enormous wreck right as we cut to commercial. Absolutely ridiculous scenes. Oh, man. And that was the cherry on top of what was a horrific day for Team Penske. As mentioned, locked out 4 of the top 5 spots in qualifying. It's classic Penske. For those who don't know, in the 8 years since we've come back to Gateway, Penske has won 6 of them. Joseph Newgarden has won 5 of them. This was Penske hunting ground This was the, I think maybe they can salvage something out of this championship, and it starts here, and they ended up, well, just checking my notes here, 24th, 25th, and 27th in a 27 car race.
You know, if the accusation is that Penske Entertainment Group is rigging the series for the team that bears its name to win all the time, it's not working.
Did somebody forget to carry the one in the equation?
This is as bad as it has gotten in like 98 and 99, where this is back in an era before spec chassis and spec tires and all that other stuff. And Penske and Goodyear lost their way, and it got bad. Penske was a glorified backmarker those years. They're not that level now. They have not been ever since. But this was a bad weekend. That could have been so good.
Newgarden was leading when he wrecked. McLaughlin was in the top five for most of his running before his mechanical kicked in. On lap 215, 45 from the end, and his day was done. And Will Power had a deflated tire, had nothing to do with him himself, just a freak incident. Like, it wasn't like anybody in Penske had driven particularly badly. I mean, okay, Newgarden chose incorrectly on the accident there, but, you know, these things happen sometimes.
And you know, all the talk about it being rigged, the one complaint about that incident was he was trying to pass Pelot during it, mainly because the yellow had not come out by the, like, just until he made contact. That's when the yellow finally came out. If the yellow came out sooner, he probably would have tried to push to pass Pelot.
Yeah, and if for nothing else, the spirit of putting Alex Pelot a lap down after this dominant season he's had. That had to have... imagine Newgarden, he's probably fist-pumping to himself in the car if he's able to put a lap on Alex, say, yeah, that's for the 500, you prick. Anyway.
We're gonna get into a similar story later.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Well, that's besides the point.
Why is Joseph Newgarden behind a Dale Coyne Racing driver? I know it's Rinus VK in the standings at 16th.
Dude. Your man's is 16th in points.
You know
when the last time Joseph Newgarden was 16th in the points?
Yeah, he was a rookie in 2012 in a season where he looked lost. He had a rough 2012 season, and that's before he hurt his hand and missed a good portion of it.
Joseph Newgarden is 203 points behind Alex Pelot, and we've only had 8 races.
Joseph Newgarden's best finish in his rookie year with Sarah Fisher-Hartman Racing was 11th. And it was only one race he missed, but he might as well miss several.
My dude, Christian Rasmussen overtook him on points because of this podium he got this weekend.
And you know what? Good for Christian Rasmussen, because this was the day of the underdog, and like, I think, Dre, you were worried that Christian Rasmussen was looking like an Indy Nets champion who was going to be a bust at the top level. And it's not all there yet, but Rasmussen just needs to string together more results like this, and the vision will be there.
He's had flashes of genuine promise, Rasmussen. Like, even in his rookie season last year, he was top 10 in Mid-Ohio. My opinion, he was the real rookie of the year at the 500 that year. He was 12th on the day in that race. That was a really solid run for a first 500. I've seen what Rasmussen can do, even outside of IndyCar, because he's been in IMSA as well, a superb NMP2 driver. He's been multiple time, as we joke on this show, B-pillar merchant. Rasmussen is a talented racing driver. There is no doubt about that. But it's never been a consistent thing with him in IndyCar yet. It's never been able to string together a set of results where you go, ooh, Rasmussen's on a run. Like, you've never been able to say that about him. And again, I still haven't been able to say that about him, but this was, by a country mile, his most impressive drive in IndyCar. 70 overtakes. starting from 25th on the grid in qualifying.
If nothing else, he is trying to be the Mr. Excitement of the midfield. And I appreciate that a lot. And whisper quietly, he's only 6 points behind his more experienced teammate.
Is that down to Rasmussen having the one punchy result, or is it just because this is what Alex Rossi is now as an IndyCar driver in 2025? Because
check back with me after the Iowa doubleheader.
Good shout, but look, a tip of the hat to the flying ginger, because my word, that was a hell of a it was the confidence that Rasmussen had working the higher line. He was the one that was the spearheader of trying to overtake round the outside, and he just kept finding more and more confidence the more he rode it. And yeah, he was able to make it work faster than anybody else, and he reaped the rewards for it. His pace was insane. I didn't know ECR had that kind of car in it where it could have legitimately won this race on merit on a different day.
Yep. And outside the 500 for that matter.
Yeah, absolutely. On a short oval, mad impressive. Shout out to Rasmussen. Quite possibly the most impressive IndyCar driver of this season so far.
I would argue it may not even be the most impressive drive of the race, because King, it's time for a throwback to remind everybody that this is Connor Daly's 10th year of the IndyCar series, and he's out here doing the Lord's work on a short over for Junko's Hollinger Racing.
Yeah, he is getting that paycheck, keeping that seat long term, doing whatever he has to do to impress and make sure that his team gets funded.
I mean, you look at the standings now and you look at the people around him on the table, this pretty much guarantees Daly leader circle money. Yeah. Now at this point, like, he's 17th in points. He's way above that cut line at the moment. This was huge for Connor Daly. Again, might be his most impressive drive in an IndyCar. There is a good 4-5 lap sequence where he and Pato O'Ward are banging wheels and going back and forth. And look, we've said it before on this show, Pato O'Ward is arguably the best oval racer in the world. Top two at worst. It's 1A and 1B between him and Joseph. Connor Daly passed him straight up in a dogfight when they were the only two dudes at the front of the field on a restart. Like, I've never seen Daly drive so aggressively and drive so hard in what is his year 10 season. He's 33 years old now, and I don't even know how you should describe him. Journeyman, veteran, plucky underdog. I don't know what it is, but
he should have been run out of the sport at least three times over by now.
Yeah. He's driven for everyone on the grid except for Penske and Ganassi, which is just wild that Daly just keeps finding a way to stay around, have his seat with him. He is the true IndyCar driver for hire at this point. And as I said in my written piece on the website, well, as it says about another certain sport, how can you not be romantic about Connor Daly in IndyCar when he's doing shit like that? It was impossible not to root for Connor in that scenario. It was just great television and a great moment and a reminder that Daly's always been good at this. He's just never been able to find a secure home. And, well, maybe he has now with Junkos. I hope it does, because he's good enough to be on this grid, certainly.
Chris said it before, like, they go back to their days in junior kart racing. The problem going into the season was that we thought he wasn't going to have the sponsorship to even finish out or even start the season.
Yeah.
Another setback. But then, all of a sudden, sponsors keep coming in. After he remarks that he pees his pants during the 500, what happens? His adult diapers comes in with a helmet sponsorship for him.
He just does shit like this. He makes people want to back him. I wish all of us had that sort of clout chasing ability that Connor Daly apparently has. Maybe it's the influencer partner in his life that's had a word figuring it out, basically. But it's working for him, and well, he's delivering on track. As Kira quite rightly puts in our chat, he's a likable, good dude for the most part who loves his series, stupid amount and shows it. Yeah, He is IndyCar's biggest suckerific soldier. And again, you have to kind of admire that about him. It's definitely a trait that I nod at. Good for him. I wish he wasn't so dabbling in the funny money so much, but they can't all be winners.
RJ, it's funny because Todd Ald is getting sued out of oblivion. It's crazy.
No kidding. When is David Manukas going to win one of these?
And I don't know. It looked like this is going to be the one. And you mentioned like it took forever for them to throw the caution for Foster, and that's what caused Newgarden's wreck. When Manukas scrapes the wall, that caution is out immediately.
King, how cynical were you when they saw they dropped the caution when the Manukas skimmed the wall? Not even hit it, skimmed it.
Now, part of me was thinking they quickly learned their lesson. I wasn't so conspiratorial as one McLaren driver was.
We'll get to that briefly in a minute. But they pulled that sucker out immediately. Wait a minute. Look, like, specialist hero here is almost hitting the wall. Caution. Try and save him. It was bad. The IndyCar was a bit too quick on that one, quite frankly. I mean, don't get me wrong. I'd much rather see a caution too early than too late, if I have to choose. But a bit sketchy, that one. But RJ, you've gassed up Manukas on this pod for months now. When am I getting a return on my investment?
I feel like it's coming soon. It should have been this weekend, because this was the sign of his breakout when he was at Coin. There's a good chance David Manukas wins that race a couple years ago. Just doesn't happen. I mean, he salvages 12th out of it. You take that. But again, check back with me after the Iowa doubleheader. It's a similar kind of track. And also, by the way, Manukas likes those right turns a lot more than people realize.
I'd like him to show it without putting Alex Palou in the wall one week first. Because he was running top five in Detroit until he hit Palou and took a drive-through penalty and ended up 12th. It's happened here again. At one point, he was leading this race by 5 seconds. Was battling for the lead, still was in the top three when he goes up, checks up and hits the wall, skims it, ends up 12th again. It's frustrating because I know the talent is there with Manukas. And look, it has not helped that he has been penciled in as the prodigal son at Team Penske this year. And if you're doing that sort of conversation with the evidence presented in front of us so far this year, it's hard for me to buy the argument that Penske needs to move one of its drivers out right now for Manukas. Because right now, I don't think we can have this conversation given...
Well, there's a conversation that I don't want to have because I personally think it's silly that there is a driver that they can move on. If you're just basing it off of 25.5 results, again, I think it would be very silly for them to do this, but I know people have even half seriously brought it up.
Go on.
Joseph Newgarden.
The line I've used since the 500, which again was not his fault, Simon Pagenaud was fired for less than this year. Now,
people want to speak Joseph Newgarden getting kicked down to ECR into existence so bad, it's crazy.
Like, one word question. Why? Just like...
Yeah, look, on a real level, no, you're not doing that. Newgarden was given a multi-year extension last year for a reason. And that was, even if the overall standings weren't quite telling the full picture, he did win them 2 500s back-to-back. That enough alone would get a lot of people extensions in IndyCar. And Newgarden still had flashes where he was looking like his usual elite running self. You don't drop a dude after one bad season, because IndyCar is the sort of championship where it wouldn't take much for a season to fall off the rails. Now, it's funny you mentioned this, because James Hinchcliffe was on the Races IndyCar podcast this week and said that Newgarden is still driving like an elite driver. I'm somewhere in the middle of that scale between get him out of the team and he's still elite, because the signs were there last year that New Garden was struggling a little bit. And it feels like that's continued into this year, which is not great. I don't think he's been the 16th best driver in IndyCar this season. I think that would be harsh. It was harshly DNF'd here. It was bitterly harsh. He got knocked out of the 500 because when he was running in fifth when he had his fuel pressure problem, he was having a phenomenal race to that point. But at what point do we call this a concern? Because it's not the ovals I'm concerned about. It's everything else that's been the problem. You know, one podium this year in St. Pete on Royal Street tracks. His average finish on them has been hovering around 12 to 13 for the last year and a half. It's straight mid. And you know him better than most, RJ. And look, I think the people on the super hateful side of this argument are wrong. But I don't think their arguments are completely invalid.
Part of me of this one. Do you think the greats, everybody, take their pound of flesh and shit on Joseph Newgarden's character tour from the spring of last year after push to pass gate? Do you think that that has done like irreparable damage to like his mental state as a driver?
Well, I don't know, because he won a 500 a month later. I mean,
outside of the 500, I should say.
Well, this is the problem. IndyCar, 75% of the game is the 500. That's the problem. Like, it's... And we have stretched that phrase to its absolute limit with Newgarden, because he's been so good at Indianapolis for all of his career, let alone the last 2 years he actually won it. The only times he wasn't a player was when Penske themselves were in the doldrums
for a couple of years. I don't know, because like the whole thing about Joseph Newgarden win the first time is because it took him 13 years, 12 years to win it.
Yeah, there was a few near misses in there you could sprinkle in, to say the least, but the quality was still there. There was no doubt about that part, at least. No,
I don't know, man. Like, I want him to get back to being the three-tool driver that he once was. I don't know what that's going to take. I don't know what lifestyle change that has to take. I don't know what that is going to take. I'm not Joseph Newgarden. I don't talk to him on a regular basis. But I am starting to worry that he has a Hall of Fame career locked up as it is. I'm just worried that he's going to flame out too soon.
He is still only 32 years of age.
34.
34, actually. He's a little bit older than that now. God, he really has been around for longer than you think. It's because he hasn't aged in about 8 years, the poor guy. Lucky bastard. But the thing is that there's no specific flashpoint or pinpoint that is obvious to point to go, this is why Newgarden's declined or struggled in the last year and change or so. And because, again, he's won two 500s. The problem is, when Road America is now going to be the third anniversary since he last won a Road or Street Course race.
Yeah. Remember when he was the person to get the $1 million bonus for winning on all three track types?
Yeah. Yeah.
That was just recently. I can't figure it out, man. I do want a dad.
You know, he's become a dad. He said he was dropping everything the start of 2024 to focus on his driving. And he unfollowed everybody on social media. He broke up with his social media manager, got a new one. Renewed focus on racing. Hasn't fixed it. Not really. King, is there anything here you can point to? Because it's just bizarre seeing someone as good as him just struggle straight up.
Yeah, it's sort of like Penske in recent years have always been better on the short ovals compared to the road and street courses. And we haven't really had many ovals so far this year. So maybe the rebound's going to come along, because he was running well at Gateway before the crash.
Yeah.
I don't know what's going to take for them to find the pace when it comes to the right-hand corners, but it seems they still have the left-handers down.
Yeah, And that is worth something. That's worth a lot in this series.
But even then, that just brings back echoes to the last time that Penske were truly mid to awful in the late 90s, where, yeah, they had a good short oval program and everything else was hot dog water. And Paul Tracy got fired from Penske for saying it on the record in 1997.
Not ideal. Again, there's just no obvious thing you can point to, and that's what makes it all the more confusing that we're in this situation with him. We'll have to, again, we'll keep tabs on it. We'll have to wait and see. I don't think Penske needs to do anything drastic like letting the man go. I don't think it's at that level of extreme, but there's no cutting around it. 16th in points halfway through the year is a disaster. And that is not what anybody at Team Penske's for. And the only thing that might be sparing his blushes a bit further is that everyone at Penske has had their fair share of either bad luck, shit results, or embarrassing flashpoints.
Yeah. Will Power is still the best driver at Penske. He's still a distant seventh. Is that bad enough to put him out to pasture? Not really.
Probably not. McLaughlin's still, when he's not had horrible
luck. Scott McLaughlin is the most secure man in his position.
Right. And that's wild in itself. Before we go, we weren't going to talk about this, but certain people on social media decided they wanted to start some fires and kick some cans down the road by posting a radio message of Nolan Siegel popping off. Getting, I believe, King, it was a drive-through penalty for a block.
Blocking Scott McLaughlin.
Yes, he was given a drive-through penalty for that, and Nolan absolutely blows up. He refers to previous incidents. There's a lot of F-bombs in there. Basically goes as close as saying that basically Team Penske's rigging it in their favor, essentially. It's messy. The stewards get criticized. It's grim.
Yeah, he made a reference to the last rounds in Detroit where McLaughlin drove through him, and you know, he did get penalized, but he got to continue the race. But Siegel was obviously taken out of the Detroit Grand Prix, and For this penalty, he was yelling at his team to go tell race control about it, that, you know.
Do it right now.
I got the quote here. Bull bleep, bleep, bull bleep. Absolutely not. Absolutely not. He bleep takes me out of the last race and gets the bleep continued. No, F that S. Tell Penske to go F themselves. I want you to talk to them about the penalty. That's F bull.
Yeah, the way he makes it seems like, again, while Penske Entertainment does own the IndyCar series, Penske does not control race control. Team Penske has nothing to do with how the penalties are doled out. It's not the best look to be implying that one of the other teams is, you know, telling race control what penalties go out there.
Yeah, it's a classic you are bringing the series into disrepute argument. And Nolan and McLaren apologized on social media today for the comments that were made. Funnily enough, they didn't do that on Monday. Just saying. it seems like a nice tall glass of "we got caught" more than anything else, even though these have been messages in the public domain since the race actually happened on Sunday night. So what took you so long to apologize?
Well, one thing that did change is that clip circulated on social media in a much larger volume than it would have circulated if it had just circulated through the IndyCar Series app, which you could download on iOS and Android.
Whoops. And a lot of people got into some quite heated arguments about this, and I'm just like, I wonder, and a part of me wonders, because Siegel was so damning about the state of the series is officiating, and you know, Penske again not running it, of course we all know they don't actually run race control, but they do of course own the speedway in the series. Are people using that as like a magnifying glass, as like a metaphor to talk about the bigger problems of the series in general? Because that's what this felt like.
I absolutely I don't agree with that assessment, but you have to know that people will look to what Nolan Siegel said and they'll be like, yeah, yeah, that's right. You fucking tell them. You fucking stick it to those corrupt motherfuckers.
Which is why it's a problem and why McLaren had to apologize for it.
Yeah. The way things have gone down at Penske's ownership of IndyCar in the last 5 years, and I think it's more been disappointing rather than an outright failure that things haven't moved the needle. But do you think they've gotten any benefit of the doubt after pushed pass gate, attenuator gate, any of this other stuff?
There's a lot of reason to be frustrated at Roger Penske and the ownership of the series and some of the key flashpoints in the last few years. Pato Hu, the two cheating scandals, the still lack of a third OEM, the pressure that Honda might be leaving in a year and change's time.
Because they feel like they have the deck unfairly stacked against them. Honda has now won every race in 2025. I'm just saying.
Funny that, isn't it? No. How these things turn out. No, but there is a lot of genuine reason to be frustrated at the state of IndyCar right now. And, of course, Roger Penske owning the series while also having a team in there that he owns. Of course, people are going to look at the red rag on the bull and you know, use Siegel's metaphor, as RJ alluded to, as a, hell yeah, give it to him.
Yeah, because I'm saying if a driver of a higher statue of Nolan Siegel said that, if that's like a Pato Ward or an Alex Palou or somebody from another non-Penske team saying that, that's getting printed out on a t-shirt that's worn by at least 15,000 people at Road America next Sunday.
If it was Pato, I'd probably say, you know, I'd probably agree with you annoyingly.
And that's the thing. With Pato's campaign last year, he did it in a way where, like, ignoring the whole, oh, Siegel used profanity and Pato didn't. That's not it. It's mainly that Pato had, like, legitimate gripes about how the championship was promoted, and IndyCar genuinely reacted.
Yeah, and it's to the point now where the Mexico City rumors are picking up more and more steam, to where I wouldn't be surprised if it's on the calendar announcement.
Yeah, it wouldn't surprise me at all if they go there next year. Like, that was the latest talk. They were just trying to figure out a date, basically, whether it's 26 or 27. Yeah. And, of course, Pato was legitimately pissed that NASCAR beat them to the punch on Mexico City. Congrats to SVG, by the way, for beating the field's ass.
Yeah. We're not fucking entertaining the whole thing about, like, oh, should a 33rd-place driver get a place? I don't care. I don't care.
None of us do. We're just here for SVG Lane.
We know he's getting knocked down the round of 16. We don't care.
Anyway.
There's a chance.
There's always a chance. No, but there's a lot of genuine reason to be frustrated. But Nolan Siegel is not the vessel for you to express your frustration. And the point is, and this goes for any sport, you cannot criticize the officials. You can't. The officials need and should be protected to a degree, because you don't want to put your series into disrepute. You don't want people accusing you of bias and corruption and all the negatives that come with running elite sport.
All we talk about in motorsport, though. Like, why do you think people are still upset at the outcome of one race that happened 4 years ago?
Because we love the drama, RJ O'Connell. We love the drama.
It's different when fans say something's rigged compared to an active participant saying it's rigged.
Yeah, that's legitimately damaging for the series at that point. Fans are always going to be arseholes to some degree, right? As a mass entity, fans are a hot mess. When an active driver is saying those things in the series he's competing in, people take notice. Rightly or wrongly, people are going to react to that. And the series has to protect itself from shit like that. And officials need to be protected from shit like that.
And I agree. That was a clear-cut block. That shouldn't happen. This is Nolan venting after a season that appeared to start with promise, started bad, and has not gotten much better outside of Barber. For a driver that up until about, it's this time last year. Dre, it was this time last year that he won the 24 Hours of Le Mans LMP2 in his first try. And that ended up being the worst thing to have happen to his IndyCar career, because that is the launching pad that McLaren uses to put him straight in the number six car.
Off the back of being bumped from the 500, having two crashes in the week leading up to qualifying. It was... I'm not going to say it was too soon, because the way Nolan Siegel was batting in Indy next, he probably would have been promoted into the series full-time the following season anyway.
Uh-huh.
But even so, at what point do you go 21st in points after the equivalent of a full season is not good?
Well, Aaron McLaren's committed to him for another year. And for a team that we've always given stick for milling out drivers like crazy, I like that they're sticking with him. I'm sure there's also an argument to be made. Why are you only sticking with guys now when you didn't before? I just hope he can find a way to turn this thing around, because I know there is a better driver in him that we haven't seen at this.
I wonder if Dennis Haug is going to tempt a few people next year. Or Lockie Hughes. They were both having very, very good Indy next seasons right now.
And you never know. There's always time for an Hallie Deegan upset victory.
Get me out of here. Get me out. Ending the podcast now. That is a perfect time to call it quits. We're getting the hell up out of here.
I could have said Tommy Smith.
I could have beaten your ass for that, but here we are. We'll be back with IndyCar next week at Road America. I love Road America.
Oh my God.
Love Road America. Give me Bratz. Give me a proper looking racetrack with a great layout and great racing. I love Road America. Can't wait for it. Looking forward to seeing how that goes down. And Alex Palou is going to play beer pong over the weekend with his new sponsored Solo Cup number 10. It's going to be a good time.
We can't have Target back, and they can't be rewokeified, but we can have something that's close.
Close enough. It's red and white, and it looks pretty. We'll take it. We'll be back next week to talk MotoGP for the Italian Grand Prix at Mugello. And don't look now, Ducati is not in red this weekend. It's in maroon, baby. Can't look forward to another edition of Our Bikes and IndyCar Road America very, very soon. Until then, I've been Dre Harrison. They've been Ryan Eric King and RJ O'Connell. We'll catch you guys next time. Thank you for listening. Sayonara.
There y'all.